Welcome to Writers' Voices. This is Cheryl Fusco-Johnson on KRUU 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. And with me today, I'm going to have Larry Brooks. He was born and raised in Portland, Oregon. Larry holds a degree in marketing communications from Portland State University. Before becoming an award-winning blogger and novelist, Larry held a variety of jobs and wrote about nearly each one. He based his first published piece, which was about the life of a minor league pitcher, on his five-year stint pitching for the Texas Rangers. Later, Larry worked as a department store personnel manager and a stockbroker. On his website, storyfix.com, he reported that each of these abandoned careers resulted in another published magazine piece, lampooning the experience. And I'm quoting him verbatim here. His interest in writing began to emerge as his best and perhaps last viable career option. Consequently, in 1983, he answered an ad for a scriptwriter at a small audiovisual production company. By 1996, that company was one of the largest marketing and training firms in the Western U.S., and Larry was a partner in it and also its executive creative director. When the business sold in 1999, he took the money and ran towards his present career as a novelist, blogger, and nonfiction book author. He's now published 11 books, some ebooks, and some traditional print books. Darkness Bound, his first published novel, was about a stockbroker who hates stockbrokering, and that book, his very first book, spent 3 weeks on the USA Today bestseller list. His fourth book, Bait and Switch, earned a starred review from Publishers Weekly and inclusion in Publishers Weekly's list of best books of 2004. Screenplays for all his books are in various stages of development by him, and in 2002, his adaptation of Darkness Bound, his first book, was named among the top 10 finalists in a screenwriting competition sponsored by the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences. Since the mid-1980s, Larry's taught workshops around the country. He's been named a mentor by the Oregon Writers Colony, and his blog, storyfix.com, was voted the number one blog for writers in 2011 on the Write to Done website, and that blog was also included among Writer's Digest's top 101 websites for writers. Larry's joining us today to discuss his latest book, Story Engineering, which has been receiving five-star ratings from readers online. Welcome to the show, Larry.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, we're thrilled to have you here, and I was interested to see that you've done a lot of teaching, and I'm curious, was it as a result of your teaching that you ended up writing Story Engineering?
Well, that's absolutely intuitively correct on your part. I started teaching probably before I should have started teaching. I was doing seminars for the Oregon Writers Colony long ago. By the way, anybody listening to that bio knows that I'm well into middle age by now. I can't hide after that bio. But yeah, I was teaching about things that I had read about instead of done, and I figured I better catch up. So I started writing screenplays first as I was giving screenplay workshops, and then finally returned to writing some novels because at that point I had a whole drawer full of unpublished novels. So it all kind of comes full circle, and it all kind of ends up feeling and tasting like the same thing with a different twist based on the application you give it, be it a screenplay or a nonfiction book or a novel. They all kind of have the same bones, I guess you could say.
I'm kind of curious about your background because you started out, you know, your education in college was in marketing and communications. Communications, of course, is a degree you can use in almost anything that you do. But did you have any kind of vision of what you would be doing in the future? Afterwards, you were doing minor league baseball and stock brokering, and it seems like you did a lot of different interesting things.
Yeah, well, no, I had short-term vision. So when I got out of baseball and I hurried up and finished my college degree, I wanted a job that could buy me a great big car really quickly, so I became a stockbroker. I realized that vision didn't work. I was the world's worst stockbroker, I think. So I kind of was drawn back into something related to writing, and I ended up with a 17-year stint in that advertising and marketing company that I ended up a partner in. That's where the degree in communications helps, and the ability to write a coherent sentence helps. So I put those two together and managed to hold the job down for a while, those 17 years. But all the whole time was writing screenplays and novels on the side, so I've always had that distraction and that goal.
So it sounds like that was always your heart's desire.
Yeah, I was, trust me, writing user manuals for Hewlett-Packard printers was never my heart's desire, but it did pay the bills. So, you know, and I don't diminish copywriting or technical writing. Just for me, it wasn't a passion. It was just something I could do okay and make a couple bucks at. And I always considered it a placeholder and a bill payer until I could finally... I think everybody in their heart of hearts has something they really want to do, even if they don't get paid much for it. You know, and that was mine, was writing stories for a living instead of copy, per se, for a living.
Well, your life experience seems to me to be kind of a indication that it's not such a bad thing for writers to do other things besides write, because you gave yourself a lot of material to write about in all these other jobs that you held.
Oh, yeah, I think that's true. And I think a lot of people come to writing, if not in their early adult years, certainly some people started as teenagers and kids with just the love of books. But a lot of people find that they need an outlet, and they want to feed back into life itself. They want to share what they've learned and in some cases rant about what they think. So writing becomes a natural outlet for that. And I do think, you know, we can set aside the success stories, the A-list authors that are under 30. That said, there aren't many of them. Most of the writers who are really, you know, having big careers and are front and center in the bookstores are people with some life experience under their belt, because quite frankly, you got to know what you're writing about. You've got to not only specific career and set pieces, like being a stockbroker or a pilot or whatever it is, but the dynamics of how to succeed and or fail in a relationship, how to survive a health scare, all of these things that middle-aged people seem to have a bigger bank of than younger people. So writing can have a very long apprenticeship before one feels like they're qualified to sit down and write a story about anything.
Well, that's true.
You shouldn't try when you're younger, but yeah, life experience, I think, is huge. I really do.
But your book, Story Engineering, is sort of intended to help people shorten the curve of how long it takes them to write a successful novel or screenplay.
Oh, it absolutely is, because none of that life experience really tells anybody how to write a story that works. They're too completely, it's sort of like photography and painting. You know, they both show a vision of something visual, but they're completely different art forms, and you have to learn those crafts separately from the ground up. So writing again, to use that example, a printer manual for Hewlett-Packard and writing a novel that works are so completely different that the skill sets don't necessarily transfer over immediately. There's an entire infrastructure, craft, and what I like to call an underlying set of physics that make a story function well that, to some extent, we can do intuitively because we're consumers of stories. We go to movies, we watch TV, we read books. So we're exposed to the model of how a story flows pretty much our whole lives, and we can't help but pick it up. But when you sit down to do it, if all you're relying on is that intuitive memory or that instinct, you may or may not come close to the target of how to actually execute it. So my book is to fill that gap for people that they may write beautiful, award-winning sentences, and they may have killer ideas, but you have to move that skill set forward into the realm of craft, and there's a lot to it. There's all kinds of things one needs to know about how to set up a story, how to launch a story, how to layer a story, how to pace a story, and how to end one effectively.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about the core competencies? I was very impressed, especially with what you wrote about character, but I think all of your six core competencies are really important. So, but first I want to ask, is this the book that you wish you had had when you started writing Darkness Bound?
Well, to kind of give you a cheat answer, I did have it, and I had it from another application of the craft, and that is screenwriting. What's kind of interesting about the six core competencies, which is very officially targeted to writers of any kind of a story, but it's really targeted towards novelists, What's interesting about that model, the six core competencies model, is that screenwriters know that stuff inside and out. They address that level of craft on day one of their screenwriting journey. A script that lands on a producer's desk or an actor's assistant's desk and it's being read and vetted, that's the first thing they look for. Does this writer know how to structure a story according to the accepted paradigm or norms of the movie industry? And those things aren't random. Those rules, those boxes, that flow exists for a reason. And the reason is, this is how a story works best. This optimizes a story. It's the same thing, like if you're going to bake brownies, the instructions say to bake it at 375 degrees. They don't guess at that. The brownies taste better at 375 than if you tried to bake them at 200 or if you tried to bake them at 600. There's a way to do that. So there's a way to write a story as well. Screenwriters know it. So when I wrote Darkness Bound, it was actually an adaptation of a screenplay I had written, exact same story, and had optioned twice, and it's the one that did well in the Nichols Screenwriting Fellowship. So I had the story completely laid out already as a screenplay. So for me, my journey to get my first published novel out there has kind of a hidden layer to it, and that is that it was crafted, built upon the craft of how screenwriters develop a story. And in doing that, I realized novelists are rarely exposed to that. In fact, some of them reject it entirely. But even the authors who reject that modeling, when you read the books they've written, what they write ascribes to it almost identically. So it's an available way to view the process of composing a story that is much more concrete. The title of my book, Story Engineering, is very carefully selected because it's almost an engineering mindset. There's a way you build a bridge, there's a way you build a road, and there's a way you build a novel. And the most artistic of novelists, you know, might get their stomach turned by that idea and rant and rave that that's not true, there are no rules, this is art, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, the book they publish will totally line up with the principles that are engineering-oriented, in fact, engineering-oriented. And when their books don't, their editors make them rewrite it until it does. So I figured, why not start with that? Principles and criteria in place and write toward them instead of just writing a big heap of ideas that you have to retrofit, deconstruct, and basically rebuild to fit that model after the fact. It makes more sense to me to start with that craft knowledge as your guideline and then pour your story into that. And you end up with a story that has a much higher probability of working when you start with the craft in mind. So
would you explain to our listeners what pantsing is as a verb for you? What is it when you're...
It's just slang for seat-of-the-pants storytelling, where you just sit down and you write it out of your head. You just dump it out of your head onto the page, and it is what it is when it gets to the page, meaning if the writer understands the principles of structure, the principles of pacing, and the criteria that I write about, and have broken down into six core competencies, if a writer gets that intuitively, or if they're Stephen King or Nora Roberts or somebody like that that has done it so often successfully that they don't need to give it any more thought, it tends to dump out of their head in the right order and in the right way. So they're very successful pantsers, seat-of-the-pants, organic storytellers. The problem is when a newer writer who doesn't possess a knowledge and an intimacy with that underlying craft sits down to try to, quote-unquote, pants a story, they probably aren't going to have a story that is balanced across the arc of the optimal structure. And if they do, they kind of got lucky because their intuition was good. So pantsing is, you know, organic writing. Some people defend it loudly and vehemently, and they, you know, I've been kind of vilified in that camp for suggesting that it isn't a good way to write a book. And so be it. If that's how I'm interpreted, then it's probably not a healthy thing for me to put out there. On the other hand, pantsers don't succeed with a story until their story aligns with these principles. So the principles aren't debatable. The process process is everybody's personal choice. And the process ranges from somebody who plans every moment of their story down to the nth detail, writes it as an outline, and then writes the draft, to the people who blank, face the blank page and have no idea what the second page is going to be about. You know, it's got that wide a range. But irregardless of where one resides on that continuum, the principles are there, and they absolutely aren't negotiable, and they demand a story that aligns with them.
Well, you're preaching to the choir here, but first I want to remind listeners you're listening to KRUU 100.1 FM. This is Cheryl Fusco Johnson hosting the show Writers' Voices, and I'm very excited to have Larry Brooks with me today. Among writers, he has really won a lot of acclaim for his new book, Story Engineering, that breaks down the process of writing a novel very precisely, and anyone who is tackling a novel, I think, would be really have a great pattern to follow. And when I say pattern, I'm just talking about sort of the skeleton. And Larry was just talking about his book is a little bit controversial among some circles. There are two types of writers. There's a type of writer that really likes to plan, and there are writers who like to just sit down and start writing. And that latter method of writing involves lots and lots of rewriting. And what Larry's book does is help novelists cut down on the amount of rewriting they have to do by doing careful planning and understanding structure. So how has writing this book affected your ability to do, and also maintaining your blog? You have a very popular blog called Story Fix and for writers, and I'm wondering, are you still having time to write? You're having to spend a lot of time managing your blog and promoting Story Engineering, and how do you feel about that?
Well, I'm glad this is radio, because you can't see me shaking my head self-deprecatingly right now, because, no, I don't have a lot of time to actually write novels anymore. I wrote one as a ghostwriter for someone else to help pay the bills, and when I wrote that novel, it was fast and it was fun. I mean, I believe in the power, the empowering essence of this craft model so much that I'm at the point where I wrote the book on it, so I should know it, right? When I wrote the novel, it kind of came out of my head to some extent. I enhanced the novel because I just had thought through the story to the point where I knew where the story points were, where the context shifts were, and so forth. So the one time I've tried it, I've written one novel and one screenplay since the book was published, and it was really empowering for me. But it's always been empowering, because I learned the craft. My dirty little secret is I have 7 unpublished novels in a drawer prior to learning to write screenplays.
Oh, that's so interesting.
When I went out to learn how to write a screenplay, because I was actually hired to write one by an established producer that I lucked into meeting, I figured I needed to know how to write a screenplay. All I had going for me, I was a movie freak. I was a total fan of movies, but I didn't know how to write a screenplay. I knew how to write 7 unpublished novels, but those were novels that were one of those seat-of-the-pants propositions, and when they were rejected, I never really knew why. You know, editors don't tell you why. They just say, thank you, we appreciate the opportunity to see your work. It's not for us.
Huh.
Good luck. And that's what a rejection letter sounds like. Nobody tells you why they reject your book.
You had a lot of perseverance to write 7 novels when, you know, like after you had, and that would entail more than 6 rejections. It's not like you send each novel to only one place. So you stood up to a lot of rejection, which I think that's sort of a lesson in itself, that you went through all that and then had to go to a different genre, had to go to screenwriting to figure out novel writing. That's fascinating.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that I had to, but because I was kind of shoved in that direction and it worked, I began pondering, why aren't more writers doing this? Or what is the value that the whole screenwriting system espouses, teaches, and lives that can be of value to novelists? So that's what I began teaching. And I was teaching this model for years, and then blogging about it for quite a while before I wrote the book.
Now, had you done a previous book about how to write?
Well, I had done a couple of e-books. I did an e-book called Story Structure Demystified.
And what is that similar to story engineering, or how is it different and how is it the same?
Well, it actually became a subset of story engineering. I also wrote another book called The Three Dimensions of Character. And those two e-books cover two of the six core competencies, structure and characterization. There's four others. And I figured those books were quite successful, four e-books, self-published e-books. And I think the first one sold like 10,000 copies or something like that online through my site. I still sell them, and they're really not available on the site anymore. Somehow people are digging up the link and sending me money for that book. And I decided that this would be the basis for story engineering. So I added the other four core competencies and then smoothed it all together so that it flowed as one teaching document. And that was the manuscript for story engineering.
Well, I don't want to tease listeners too much with the six core competencies without giving you a chance to talk about it. But before we do that, I'm curious, do you feel like what you learned in college in your marketing degree and communications degree helped you create such a successful website that you could sell 10,000 ebooks on it? Like, where did this knowledge come from that enabled you to do that?
17 years as a high-level copywriter for a big-time high-tech agency did that, much more than the degree. Now, the degree helped me get that job, but it was the actual life experience sitting in, you know, stuffy meeting rooms with people half my age, you know, who were assigned to get a product out to market and looking to me to write their websites and copy and promotional videos and trade shows and speeches and all that stuff. You know, there's just a sensibility to it. It's like fitness. It's like learning to cook. I mean, you're fit, you can apply that fitness to any sport. If you know how to cook, you can apply that knowledge to any dish you're asked to do. So if you understand kind of at the most basic level how introducing and positioning a product works, then to that extent, I applied my career learning curve toward how to sell something through my website. You know, it's interesting, websites can't be too overt, and mine isn't. You know, it isn't all about, my website is here so that you'll buy my book. That's not the idea at all. The website is a very unique thing and revolutionary in its objective, if you will, because a good website just gives away as much information as fast as it can.
Well, your website is providing authentic information for people. I mean, there's a lot. Maybe not all listeners are familiar with the National Novel Writing Month, which I don't know why they did it this way, but it's November. It's a time when a lot of people are really extra busy. But you have a lot of material for people who are interested in doing National Novel Writing Month, just how to kind of walk them through it, and on a lot of other topics as well. And that must all take you a lot of time to produce. But I guess that...
It does take a lot of time.
The payoff was then you ended up with story engineering, and that's, you know, another way that people can get to know you and maybe also, you know, become more familiar with your novels. Is that your thinking?
Well, yeah. I mean, let's look at Dr. Oz. He's kind of the grand champion, the big poobah of how this works. You know, his identity is, I will tell you things about health that are true and you can count on. And all you have to do is turn me on TV. You don't have to send me a dime. And that's called branding. And the more of Dr. Oz we see, when he does put out a product like a book or his own TV show, he's credible. And we already know and like what he's saying about these topics, so people start buying his books. And he didn't quite that linear, as you know, because he did have a book called You, the User's Manual, I think it's called, or the Owner's Manual. But that's how it works with the blog, too, and especially in writing. You give it away. You just put content online to help people, and only to the extent at the end, kind of the essence of it is, if you like what you've read here, I have an ebook on this subject if you'd like to buy it. Click the link at the right. And that's about all the promotion you can really do without coming off as, oh, this thing is just a thinly veiled ad for what I do.
Right.
You've really got to deliver content, and I'll go 10, 12, 15 blog posts in a row before I'll even mention that I'm selling anything. Now, if one looks at the rest of the website, you can see book covers and links for things that I do sell through my site. But the content itself, the post itself, is really designed to deliver information and or entertain people sometimes. Sometimes I'll try to write something kind of humorous or tell a story on myself and make people giggle. And sometimes I like to stir it up, too. In fact, the next post I'm going to write is about how to put why putting something disturbing in your novel is a good thing. That's the next post I'm developing. So, you know, maybe that will make its way into an ebook or the next writing book I'm going to do. Probably will, but right now that isn't my intention. I'm just focusing on the website, on getting that piece of information out there.
Well, I guess that also keeps you writing, at very regular intervals and exploring topics that you're interested in going to in more depth. So you force yourself
Absolutely.
To clarify your thinking and, you know, to make your blog post, and then you can continue exploring that topic. But let's not tease the listeners too much. Let's get into what your six core competencies are. So would you mention what they are, and then maybe we'll explore each one a little bit.
People can buy my book and they can learn what all six of them are. We can get this go right to the good stuff. Just kidding. No, of course, that's just what I'm saying we don't do.
Well, of course, you do have them on your website as well, which is storyfix.com.
Yeah. So. What's interesting about what I sell is everything in those books is available for free on the website. However, there's well over 400 posts on my website, and nobody's going to call through all that stuff to find, you know, it's not grouped necessarily in an available way. So the books become, in a way, condensed, smoothed out versions of the website to some extent, and then obviously I need to put new content in the books. The six core competencies themselves are really just a way of organizing all the stuff we need to consider and eventually know and hopefully master before we can write a successful story, be it a novel or a screenplay. This model applies equally to novelists or screenwriters. Of the six things, now one could argue, wait a minute, Larry, there's not just six things. There's 95 things we need to know. That's absolutely true. However, I've tested this. I've organized them into six different categories of things we need to know. And I really haven't had anybody come up with, I certainly can't, come up with a seventh one.
Anything that you left out.
So
you're not...
So I've got them, I think of them as buckets. There's six buckets of information, six buckets of skills that are not only available, but pretty much mandatory for us to wrap our head around before we can write a story that works. Of those six, four of them are elements. There's four different arenas, elements of a story that we have to consider. And then there's really only two that are the actual act of writing the story itself, which is kind of interesting. Because you think of writing a book, you know, we have to know how to write sentences, we have to write paragraphs, we need punctuation and grammar. That's all true, but that's just a subset of one of those two buckets. So let me go back to the answer to your original question. Sorry if I'm a little long-winded on this, but I think the setup is important for people to, you know, not immediately reject it when they hear, oh, six things? That's crazy. There's 90 things. Yes, there is, but they're organized into six different categories. So here they are. The four elements of a story, the four things that a writer needs to consider are as follows. Really in no particular order, because it doesn't matter which one you start with. Once you start with one, you have to consider the other three of them. And that is the concept of the story, the initial idea. Now, a concept and an idea are different things, but an idea needs to expand into a conceptual stage, if you will, or landscape for the story that basically asks a dramatic question that demands an answer. So when Clive Cussler wrote Raise the Titanic to start his career in the 70s, that's the concept. There's nothing else there. You know, Raise the Titanic. You know, there's not a character. It doesn't mean anything. You don't know how it begins, how it ends, what happens. Nothing. There's just this concept. What if you could raise the Titanic from the bottom of the ocean in 1978 or whenever that was? That's a very compelling question. So he had a concept. So that's one of the buckets, the conceptual. Now, everybody knows that you have to have a hero in a story. You have to have characters. So the whole kind of high-level header called character slash characterization is another one of those four elements, also one of those six core competencies. So you've got concept and character. Then here's the toughest one for a lot of people to get. Good stories, the best stories, cause some sort of emotional resonance, some sort of reaction in the reader or viewer if it's a movie. And the reason that happens is that there's some sort of thematic resonance to the story. It touches you. It may make you mad. It may scare you. It may make you want to fall in love again. It may make you sad. It may do all of these things. But when that happens, that's called theme. And that's one of the four elements of a story. So we've got concept, character, and theme. And then kind of the most nuts and bolts one is story, what I call story architecture, which really is nothing other than structure. It's flow. It's how does the story begin? What happens next? How do you know what to write? How do you know what follows what? What order should a story unfold in? Kind of a huge aha moment available here is that you really don't get to make that up. There's an expectation at the professional level of publishing and movie making that a story will unfold in a certain order. And if you don't know what it is, one is going to struggle to write a story that aligns with that expectation. So the fourth core competency, the fourth of the four elements, again being concept, character, theme, and now structure, is an exploration of story architecture and the reasons why for all of those decisions. And it contains all kinds of infrastructure things, like separating a story into four parts, separating those parts with story milestones, called the first plot point, the midpoint, and the second plot point, inserting dramatic moments in parts two and three, called the pinch point. All of this kind of sounds like gobbledygook when I say it that fast, but when a writer breaks it down, they find they have a tool chest that enables them. Now, what's kind of cool, Cheryl, is that people that are new to this, even people that don't want to believe it, they don't want to like it, they'll read a book or go see a movie in the next day, and they'll go, oh my gosh, there it is. This story unfolds exactly like you said it would.
Well, what I'm wondering is if the structure of story pre-exists movie making. Like when you had a tradition of oral storytelling, I wonder if the same thing was true, that certain things had to happen at certain times.
Absolutely. You couldn't be more right. This is simply a diving down and giving explanation to principles of dramatic theory, principles of narrative and exposition that have been the fuel and the power behind storytelling since people were doing it back in caves. So you're absolutely right. You really can't start a story in the middle and have it work all that well. You really shouldn't start a story at the end unless you know how to do that well. And when you quote-unquote know how to do that well, you're really looping back to the beginning and building up toward an end that you may reveal. We see that all the time, actually. And this isn't a reinvention of story. It's a clarification of story for people that are going to do it. They're going to write it.
It's almost a codification because the instructions are very precise about when to do what. And in many ways, I think it's very freeing to have a knowledge of that structure.
Yeah, it is liberating. As I've found all kinds of quotes going back for dozens, if not hundreds of years from famous writers who echo that. Mark Twain has one. I wish I could grab it out of my head. I can't right now, but about how the most liberating thing in the world is to have direction and mission. Think of parenting. Don't we have constraints on our kids? Don't we have limits on our children? Imagine raising a child with no limits and no consequences. You know, you're going to mess them up if we do that. Well, a story is the same way. If a story doesn't have discipline, if it doesn't have focus, if it doesn't have momentum, if it doesn't unfold in a certain way, it won't work very well, just like raising a kid. So it's kind of that philosophy, if you will. And what I've tried to do, actually, what I've tried to do is translate how that philosophy has been put in print for screenwriters and make it appealing and clear for novelists. And that's kind of my view. That's the longest section of the book, by the way, is the one on structure. And you can even do it graphically. You can lay it out. There's on my website, there's a reader contributed an actual four-ring circus tent where you can visually see how you start at one tent and you move into the other three, so
Well, that sounds really interesting.
Exactly.
Before we go on, I'd like to remind listeners, this is KRUU 100.1 FM. You're listening to Writer's Voices. I'm Cheryl Fusco Johnson, and with me today I have Larry Brooks, the author of Story Engineering and also a number of novels and screenplays. And we've been discussing structure. You've mentioned four elements, right? And now there's two other things.
Right.
So what were the two?
We come up against the a cynical and perhaps first blush take on this as being oversimplified. Because there's only two left. And we haven't written the book yet. I mean, all of this stuff, these four elements, are things that the writer should simply be aware of and know. And knowing them, you can plan them before you write a word. And when you write a quote-unquote outline, that's what you're doing, is you're working with those four variables in order to make them flow and fit together to the best story you can. And you could conceivably work a story out from page one to the very end moment without writing an actual word of the draft. Whether you do that or not, that's a process issue. But when it comes time to write that draft, there's two remaining buckets of information, of skills, of essences, if you will, that we need to look at. One is how to construct a scene. Scene construction and execution. Because a novel isn't one big scene. It's a collection of dozens of scenes. You know, probably on the low end, you know, some literary novels may have 15, 18, 25 scenes, and James Patterson has 120 to 150 scenes, which he calls chapters. A scene is not a chapter necessarily. A chapter can contain as many scenes as you want. A scene being any time you change time, place, or point of view in the story, you've got a new scene on your hands. Think of a movie when they change scenes. It just goes from one location to another, or it cuts from the beginning of a conversation. They skip the middle part, and they cut back in at the end of the conversation. That's a different scene. So the ability to wrap your head around how to write an effective scene is the fifth core competency. It's the first of the two, what I call, executional. If you type that in MS Word, you'll get a little red line underneath because there is no word executional, but I like it because it describes what I'm going for. It's one of the two essences of execution you have to master. And it's the thing that separates, really, more than how well you write sentences. It's the thing that separates a skilled, artistic, proven, professional writer, publishable, from a newbie who's just getting a handle on this. You can tell it right away is how these scenes flow, how they feel. They're not overwritten, they're not underwritten. They don't take forever to get into with descriptions of draperies and carpet color and all this stuff that isn't necessary, unless it is necessary and the writer has a sensibility of when and how to do that. So we'll set that aside a second. The sixth core competency being what I call writing voice, which is the writer's style, which is literally the way they put together sentences and paragraphs, which is different from scenes. Scenes are compiled by sentences and paragraphs, but a scene has its own mission to fulfill, whereas a sentence and a paragraph is always contributing toward a mission. So it's a different skill set. It's as different as, I'm very fond of analogies, been criticized for that, but to go from the act of running in athletics, that's equivalent to the act of voice in writing. You can run well, but have you mastered a sport because you can run well? No. You can run well and not succeed in basketball, not succeed in football. You just run well because there's other things involved. So that's what writing voice is like in writing a novel. It's simply your ability to write stylistically, to have a voice. And the subsets here go on for a long way. To certainly have good grammar, to know when to not have good grammar, to write street cred, you know, to write the slang, to write good dialogue, to write punchy and condensed and powerfully, to know when to click into a softer mode and how to create a pregnant pause in a story. These are all issues of voice. So there's the six core competencies: concept, character, theme, and structure being the four elements, and then scene execution and writing voice being the two realms of execution. And beneath all six of those, think of those as headers, beneath all six of those is where you can compile a list of 70, 80, 90, 120 things you need to know that are aligned under one of those six things. But for me, knowing how to separate those, instead of it being one amorphous, limitless cloud in the sky that's moving along, you try to wrap your head around it all, and it just seems flowing and moving, and, you know, what is that thing? It didn't look like that a minute ago. That's how I've always experienced the teaching of writing, is this kind of wispy, muse-driven thing that really can be broken down into concrete, criteria-driven elements and skill sets that can be studied, mastered, considered, planned, worked with, and then, to bring a science word to it, optimized so that they work the very best that they can work. Because oftentimes when we sit down and write a sentence and we have an idea, that just dumped out of our head and we move on. But when we look at that idea vetted? Is it explored? Is it the very best idea it could be given the context of how it's supposed to work in the story at that moment? Maybe, but it may not be. But if we're just writing along madly and you never return to that moment, you have no criteria for that moment, how do we know if that's the very best thing that you could have written there?
Well, I think that's the real charm of your book, Story Engineering, is, many places are available for people to learn individual skills like character development or how to write a scene or, you know, playing with narrative voice. But your book, Story Engineering, presents a global picture that's very precise as to how to combine those six different buckets into something that is actually a novel.
Right. Well, I tried for that, and
I think a lot of people feel you've succeeded. Would you like to read any excerpt from the book? How do you feel about that?
No.
No? Okay. Just asking.
Probably not, because that's really a risky thing to do with a novel, I think, which just isn't, but just as an example, when I've done book signings and people want me to read from the book, all you're really showing there is one of the six core competencies of your story. You read for 6 minutes out of a book. What do people know about the concept, character, theme, and structure of the whole story? And the answer is nothing. All they can learn from that is your voice. So, in terms of reading from the book itself, I would just refer people to my website to get a sampling of how different aspects of the craft can be isolated and kicked around and torn apart and examined and critically looked at, and then hopefully see something from that. Cheryl, if you insist, I'll go grab a book and I'll start reading to you.
No,
but
that's
I really
fine.
Don't think that I got a context.
This is a little different. Like, we do always give an opportunity for our guests to read if they choose to, but this is more of a how-to book, and I think,
right,
you know, it's a little bit more, I don't want to say pedantic, it's very valuable, but it's like the narrative voice in this is maybe not, you know, necessary for listeners to hear over the radio. But I do have a question about, so you've written novels, you've written screenplays, you know, advertising, blogs, and now you've done this nonfiction book. And I'm curious if you feel like there's a structure for writing nonfiction that's as precise as the structure for writing novels. And if that's the case, where would a person find it?
Well, I do believe that there are structures that apply to nonfiction, but it's driven by the kind of nonfiction, which is interesting. Because as you talk about different kinds of fiction, the genres of fiction, that is not the case. All of these principles that I talk about in the six core competencies apply with equal validity and necessity to any kind of fiction you can think of. When you get into nonfiction, then you have to look at the actual type of nonfiction, and the conversation becomes very broad very quickly. So, for example, memoir is a different structural format than journalism. And within journalism, editorial is a different format than investigative journalism or character profile journalism or the coverage of a speech or a game kind of journalism. And each one of those probably certainly has its own expectations, guidelines, criteria, and paradigms that the pros use to execute with. answer this for hours with and won't. but I'm just kind of as a launching pad into the answer is it really depends on the kind of nonfiction you're doing, and then really drilling down into that quote unquote art form to see what those expectations are, and basically how they're written. Because again, a memoir is written completely different than a historical examination of something.
Did you study did you study existing books on how to write novels before you wrote Story Engineering?
No. And I kind of say that with a spark in my voice, because what I did is I studied how to write stories as movies. And then when I read novels and I saw the parallel, and trust me, I've been to enough workshops and have read some amount of how-to literature on how to write novels. Frankly, I don't think there's a very good bookshelf on how to write novels out there. That's one of my objectives for Story Engineering, was to reinvent the written form of teaching how to write a novel, to write a book that isn't out there. Now, there are some books out there that, what's interesting is that teachers and writers who get it, which most of them do, are saying the exact same thing with a different set of words. So like Christopher Vogler's The Hero's Journey, it's the same stuff, but with softer words, with less engineering kind of words and more relational kind of words. Hmm. So things like, the hero's adversary, and then the hero's advocate, and the hero's understudy. These are concepts that don't collide with what I write about at all. They just cast a different coat of paint on it. And those are written for novelists. James Scott Bell is a great writer who has three or four books from the same publisher that I have that basically says the same thing. I call it a four-part story structure. Some people call it a three-part. But then they break one of those parts in half, and what do you have? Four parts. So you end up saying the exact same thing. So I think the more a writer reads in this arena, and then the more they read of the actual product, the more novels they read and movies they see, this magical kind of aha, this epiphany thing happens, where this isn't the Larry Brooks way of writing or the Christopher Vogler way of writing or the James Scott Bell way of writing. This is how it's done, and all these different teachers are telling you the same thing through their own filter, their own metaphors, and their own words, their own versions of buckets, if you will, that end up being the same body of knowledge approached and cut different ways so that it can be accessible to people who think a certain way and don't think other ways. A lot of people don't like my story engineering model because it's just too structured. There are no rules. I agree, there's no rules, but there are principles, So you got to stay between the lines. One of the caveats I lay on this is we're talking about people who aspire to publish their work, which is to enter the profession of writing, which means you're not writing experimental fiction. You're not writing a novel that you're going to stick in a drawer. You're not making up your own art form, because in those cases, there really aren't any paradigms or expectations. But the second one says, I do this in my workshops. One of the first things I ask people is, who here aspires to publish a novel? And every hand in the place goes up. And if the second they have their hand in the air, I tell them to look at their hand and that they've just signed up for something. And that is, you can't operate outside the norms of the industry you want to enter. Any more than, we talked about me being a terrible stockbroker, any more than someone can enter the stock and bond business but reinvent how it's done and don't mess with that crazy New York Stock Exchange, I'm going to do it my way. It just doesn't work. You have to play the game the way the pros play it. And it is kind of cold as that sounds, that's exactly the case if you want to publish a novel. You're signing up for a job. You're enlisting in a field, a commercial profession, that's already established, and we can't change it. You can't mess with it. Now, we can be creative within those boundaries, something you said a few minutes ago, that the boundaries set you free, they do. Because if you're within the boundaries, then you're not going to make a mistake. Then go for it. Be as creative and original and fresh as you can be.
Yeah, within set parameters. within set parameters that you understand. I'm curious about your students. Have you had success stories among your students? Have you had some of them contact you and you know, report that they've had success?
Yeah, you know, not really. I don't have a big story there because my blog is only 2.5 years old, and the books have been out less than a year. So for me to come up with those kinds of stories, you know, it can take a decade or more for someone to declare that I'm going to do this before something actually good happens to them. So yes, one of my friends, students, you know, peers in the Oregon Writers Colony just landed an agent and is on the verge of selling her novel. I've heard people write me maybe once a month saying, I just sold my novel and your stuff was very helpful, thank you. But I'm not taking credit for them doing that, nor should I, nor should anybody. Anybody who does this has somehow managed to internalize the principles, what I call story physics, the internal physics, the elements, how they work together, and then apply creativity to those non-negotiable physics and come up with a story. And people like me and other writers and workshop leaders and mentors may have helped them, but Robert McKee, the great screenwriting teacher, can give you a list of like 600 people who have sold a screenplay who have been to his seminars. I wish I had that kind of resume that I taught.
So tell us a little about the Oregon Writers Colony. Where is that?
That's based out of Portland, and so about 700-800 members, and it's one of two groups in that region. The Willamette Writers is another one that I work with very closely. They gave me my start as a teacher, and the mentor thing was just kind of an honorary thing. I teach at workshops all over the country now, so I do one a year for them, basically. And I'm in the Midwest a lot and, you know, flying around doing stuff. So
people who are interested in attending one of your workshops should go to your website, which is storyfix.com. And I'm curious, what are you working on? You have so much that you're doing with blogging and teaching workshops and promoting your book. Are you currently...
You asked that question on a kind of a milestone day for me. I've been working on a proposal to Writer's Digest Books, the same people that published Story Engineering, for my next writing book. And I just finished it this morning and will be sending it.
You just finished? You just finished your next writing book today?
I finished the proposal.
Oh, the proposal.
The book.
Okay. Are you
the thing with nonfiction books like this is you can sell them before you write them.
Especially so, if you have a track record.
I haven't actually put the whole book together yet, but I have about probably half of it in pieces, and I'm looking to land a contract for that.
Do you feel like sharing?
You can do it with a novel, but you can do it with a nonfiction book.
And do you feel like sharing what the topic is, or not?
Well, the search for story, which is an expansion on the process part of what I touched on and the six core competencies. That book was very much about the tool chest and the structures and the elements. But the whole way you put those things together and where you know how to recognize what's a good story and what isn't, what's a good opening and what isn't, what's a good first plot point and what isn't, that's such an aesthetic, personal call that what I'm doing is I'm bringing, I mentioned a minute ago, those underlying story physics to bear on how you use the six core competencies to set a higher bar and make the best possible creative choices. In other words, how do you optimize dramatic tension? How do you optimize story pacing? How do you optimize the hero's journey? How do you optimize reader empathy in a story? Because those are the things that make a reader invest emotionally in your story and then recommend the book to other people. They're the things that make a story work. The six core competencies is a tool chest. But tools, as a generic term, help you build something. And this book endeavors to, what are you building? Because you can do everything right with the six core competencies and still have this mediocre story. Just like you can take an architecture class and design a house, and that house is perfectly good, but there's nothing spectacular about it. Architecture is architecture. Now, how do you how do you evolve one sense of architecture into building a masterpiece that ends up on the cover of Architectural Digest? And that's what this book is about, the search for story. How do you find the story that delivers the goods to the reader by using these tools? So that's the subject of the next book.
Have you been exploring that on your blog?
I have, yeah. I've got quite a few posts. In fact, one of them is called this, if you do the search, it's called The Search for Story. And I actually had about, in October, I did a 31 posts in 31 days series in preparation for National Novel Writing Month to help people plan their November novel. And probably 3 to 6 of those 31 posts were about how you search for your story, what you should be looking for when you go out and search for a story. Now, some people can write a story about anything, and you can write it perfectly, but it doesn't mean it's going to interest anybody else. There's actually been a novel published by a guy I know at arm's length whose main character is literally an amoeba, and I kid you not. It was published in hardcover, and the whole story was this culture of amoeba, and this one amoeba wouldn't abide by the rules of the other amoeba cells in this microcosmic world. Well, needless to say, the book flopped because nobody's interested in that. He did everything right. He had a hero, he had structure, he had theme, all of it was there, but he didn't optimize the available physics, the available forces that make a story work. And one of those forces is you need to come up with a story landscape and an idea that is inherently interesting to other people, right? And amoeba aren't. They're just not that interesting. So it's kind of a case study I use on, you know, you're still very much alone with the keyboard, no matter how much you master the 6 core competencies, on making the decisions about what you're going to write about, how you're going to tell your story, so that it optimizes, pardon the overuse of that word here, but so that it maximizes the force of those underlying story physics that make a story sizzle.
Well, I'm glad that you are putting all this into a book, because we're coming to the end of our time together. I want to remind listeners, this is Writers' Voices. I'm Cheryl Fusco Johnson, and we've been listening to Larry Brooks, author of Story Engineering and also a number of novels. And he has a website, storyfix.com. If you want to learn more about Larry and his books, that's where to go. And do you have any final words for us?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. I always I get kind of hot and sweaty talking about this stuff, and when I'm in a workshop, I'm pacing the floor. So it's fun for me to talk about it, because if there's only a handful of people out there who got something out of this, then it's very much worth the time. Writing is very rewarding, but it really is a demanding thing. And like anything else in life, you get out of it what you put into it. And there's available tools to make what you put into it more effective for you.
Okay, well, thank you for sharing your ideas with us. That's it for today. Bye now.
Writers' Voices is hosted, produced, and engineered by Monica Hadley, Caroline Kilborn, Cheryl Fusco Johnson, and Corey Hickenbottom. Archives are available at KRUUFM.com and WritersVoices.com. Writers' Voices is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.